from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
David Cobb writes about college football and college basketball for CBS Sports. Follow him on Twitter, on X, at David W. Cobb. Cobb, I guess let's start here with the most recent thing that you've written. Is there anything dumber than a win percentage restriction in college football for the Hall of Fame?
Yeah, if you're referencing the fact that Mike Leach is not in, and this week, in the past couple weeks, some pretty prominent coaches have voiced their displeasure with the fact that he was not on the ballot this year. Because, yeah, he felt like 0.04 percentage points shy of that 60% threshold. But it should be so much more than that. He impacted the game with the way he overhauled schematics. And then look at the schools where he coached. The fact that he was even in the neighborhood of 60% winning percentage at Texas Tech, Washington State, and Mississippi State, all that does is add to his legacy and serve as a testament to the caliber of coach that he was.
Yeah, I mean, to me, like, that's the whole deal. We have always inherently understood not all jobs are equal. This is not the NFL where systematically there's no reason why Green Bay can't be just as good as the New York Football Giants. Like, but in college football, we inherently accept there are better jobs than others. I don't know about Mississippi State, but I do know Washington State and Texas Tech as programs had overall losing records, and the man still came within basically, what, one win of being a 60% win coach?
Right, and then you could drop you or I into Alabama or Georgia or
Ohio. We'd win nine.
We'd have a 60% winning percentage. We'd be on the Hall of Fame ballot, and Mike Leach isn't. So it's one of those technicalities that I'm sure this is going to get resolved. There's no way Mike Leach doesn't make the College Football Hall of Fame in relatively short order, because there's actually been exceptions in the past. He wouldn't be the first exception to this rule. There have been other coaches who fell short of that mark, and they made exceptions. Why they didn't do that right out of the gate for somebody like Mike Leach, I don't know. Maybe it was just an oversight.
Well, it's like the other thing is, okay, a Hall of Fame is also supposed to be a museum of history. Name someone who's had more influence on the game of college football like in the last 30 years in terms of what everyone's doing.
Yeah, it's hard to do because look at the tree. I think I saw something today. There's like 14 FBS head coaches on the Mike Leach coaching tree. Look at Lincoln Riley, who's manufactured multiple Heisman Trophy winning quarterbacks with tenets of the scheme that he learned under Mike Leach at Texas Tech. And so that's part of the legacy too, is the coaching tree. And there are few out there, alive or dead, that have a better coaching tree than Mike Leach.
Speaking of Lincoln Riley, did you see our boy Finebaum cooking this week on First Take?
Dang, yeah. Going in on him, man.
Not only that, he booked, not only did he go in on him, he booked him to get fired and then prime time to USC. I don't know if the world's ready for that. That would be must watch.
It would be something. It would be something. The idea that, you know, maybe Deion Sanders could go to USC, have more NIL resources, do a little more in high school recruiting. It's an interesting thought.
Well, it's like the most Hollywood coach at the school that's just outside of Hollywood.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, even if Prime is at USC, USC football is still number five or number six in the Los Angeles sports hierarchy. I mean, there's still two NFL teams. There's still two.
Well, USC is probably bigger than the Chargers.
You really think so?
Yeah. The Chargers had to pay fans to get in. They couldn't sell out the Home Depot Center that holds 20,000 people when they first move.
Well, just wait till Jim Harbaugh gets it rolling out there.
Did you see our boy was cooking with gas? Well, what's the quote? He opened his day one of camp presser. Feels like New Year's Day. Feels like being born. It was like coming out of the womb. I will say, like, going back to the NFL, like, he is staying true to who he is. It's like, first off, Jim, quick follow-up. Do you actually remember that? I have no recollection of what it was like coming out of the womb. I don't even know, like, what my earliest memory is, but I'm pretty confident it's not before, like, two or three.
Jim Harbaugh strikes me as one of those people who would legitimately claim to remember being born.
He might remember you could talk me into, like, he remembers being conceived.
Oh, God. That's one thing I certainly don't want to remember.
Yeah, I mean, that's unreal. Okay, we got Big Ten Media Days going on. I feel like we're kind of, I know the Cover 3 boys are live at, what is it now, Lucas Oil? They're live at Lucas Oil. They've been doing a great job. It just kind of feels like collectively we're just kind of over Media Days.
To a certain extent, that's true. But I don't know. I kind of enjoyed this week because I actually learned things about programs watching these Media Days now because there's so many new players. And they at least get asked about the top two or three transfers that they brought in. And it's sort of a nice little refresher that, oh, yeah, Malik Murphy is now competing for the Duke starting quarterback job. You know, random stuff like that. And then there's a little bit of comedic relief. I don't know if you've seen the clip that's going around at the moment, but Deshaun Foster, the new UCLA coach, he gets up to the mic on the main podium at Lucas Oil and kind of looks like a deer in the headlights, and very clearly this is his first rodeo, and it was a little bit cringeworthy. And so, you know, you get a few moments here and there that are at least good for some comedy.
Yeah, there was that exchange. The other thing I was thinking about, because Tim Murray and I were talking about this last week, and I saw Bill Conley actually wrote it up. So it's always nice to know that if two degenerates have the same thought, that when someone actually smart brings it up, it's interesting. All right, I'm going to do a little blind resume, getting you ready for college basketball season. You ready?
Okay.
Quarterback A, 66% completion rate, 13.8 yards per completion, a sack rate of 4.4%, a interception rate of 1.7%, 45 non-sack rushing yards, and a total QBR of 83.8. All right, that's QB1.
Mm-hmm.
QB2, 61% completion rate, 12.1 yards per completion, 4.3% sack rate, 2.8% interception rate. He does have over 410 more rushing yards, so 455 non-sack rushing yards and a total QBR of 75.1. QBA is Kyle McCord. QBB is Will Howard. And I'm not someone that would stump and say, you know, Kyle McCord's a great player. But I did feel like there was a lot of scapegoating of Kyle McCord last year. And it's like, I just feel like I'm wondering if the standard's going to be for Ohio State, they got to win a national title or get damn close. Are we sure Will Howard's the guy?
I think they've downgraded even further. Like, obviously, Kyle McCord was a downgrade from the legacy of Ohio State quarterbacks that have come through there under Ryan Day. I mean, it was just one prolific passer after another, oftentimes dual threat guys too. And then Kyle McCord couldn't quite live up to the Heisman finalist standard. Yeah, and he becomes the scapegoat.
Kyle McCord was worse than C.J. Stroud. Yes, the guy that lit up the NFL as a rookie.
Yeah, and then you got Justin Fields behind him and J.T. Barrett, and the list goes on at Ohio State. So, yeah, kind of tough shoes to fill. The thing about Will Howard is he was probably going to get beat out at Kansas State. Like, if you listen to the narratives coming out of Manhattan, Kansas right now, it's that, hey, Avery Johnson was going to be our guy. Will Howard left because he knew he was probably going to lose his job. And now Ohio State ends up with the guy who was probably going to be the backup at K-State. I mean, that's a pretty tough look right now for Ohio State, because that's the one position that you have a little bit of question about, because they fortified everything else. They brought back a ton of players on that defense who could have turned pro. They obviously brought in Caleb Downs and Quinshon Judkins from the portal. But quarterback is the one position where you look at it and you're like, okay, I know you guys are trying to be Michigan 2.0, but I don't think Will Howard is quite on the J.J. McCarthy level. And as you lay out, he may not even be on the Kyle McCord level.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the one argument I could make for him is Kyle McCord did get to throw to unbelievable weapons, and Will Howard did not. So that can kind of – and essentially what you're asking is we need Will Howard to be a little bit more of the running game, because that's when we – like, going back to your point, like, Ryan Day's had more success when guys can move a little bit. So Howard moves a little bit better. But, man, I just – I don't know. Like, I'm just having this tough time of thinking that that's the guy that's going to go and beat Georgia.
Well, I think there's also a narrative that, oh, well, once Will Howard gets under the tutelage of Chip Kelly, boy, he'll take a big jump forward. He'll be a more better down the field threat and a great quarterback now once he gets under Chip Kelly's tutelage. Well, let's not pretend as though Colin Klein wasn't a pretty good offensive coordinator at Kansas State. I mean, he was good enough to where Texas A&M went out and poached him and has a pretty good reputation himself. And in this day and time, we've sort of seen the offensive game catch up to Chip Kelly. He's not the innovative, forward-thinking type of offensive coordinator that he was 15 years ago at Oregon. So I think there's a little bit of a misnomer there, too, that there could be some huge step forward because now Will Howard's finally going to get developed. I think he was developed pretty well at Kansas State.
Are you as – I understand from a roster perspective, Oregon and Ohio State are probably the two clear choices for the Big Ten. The one thing that I'm actually very curious about heading into the season, how do we think this travel stuff's going to go? Because, like, there's a lot of long road trips, and I'm just wondering if, like, this thing could get a little nuttier than we think.
Oh, it definitely could. I mean, after those two, and even with those two, with some of the trips they have to take, it's a bit of a free-for-all in the Big Ten. I mean, you assume Penn State and Michigan are going to be right there nipping at the heels of Ohio State and Oregon, but you know, after that, it gets mushy real quick because we're talking about Iowa and Rutgers having two of the most favorable schedules in the league, and to the extent that they could actually be upper third in the league standings. And so it could get weird. Look at Oregon, for example. Like, they got to go to Wisconsin. They got to go to Michigan. They got to go all over the country. And we're just assuming that Oregon's going to easily transition into the Big Ten, and that Dylan Gabriel is going to be this seamless substitute for Bo Nix. But I mean, there's a lot of assumptions there, and that's a big leap for a program that spent the entirety of its life, you know, primarily on the West Coast.
Okay, you just spurred a thought, because I don't know what I would pick. Would you rather have Dylan Gabriel or Bo Nix?
I think I'd rather have Bo Nix.
I think so too, but. Man, the thing about Bo is Bo was a master at putting up numbers, but like he was the king of, I'd look up and see the guy threw for 350, like four scores, no picks. And the entire time, like, did he make a throw that I was impressed by? Like that, I feel like that was my entire existence watching Bo at Oregon. But I also think that Gabriel's just, I don't know. Like, to me, like, that's like, I don't know if I'd pull the trigger. I think you're right. I think I'd probably say Bo.
I think he was just so – Bo Nix was so mistake avoidant, I guess, last season. Like, he always had Oregon in the right look. He always made the right throw. And they unlocked something in him that was clearly never unlocked at Auburn. And it was a pretty incredible testament to that Oregon staff and Will Stein, their OC. So is there that next level for Dylan Gabriel at Oregon now? I don't know. I mean, he was with Josh Heupel at UCF. That's some pretty good quarterback development. He was with Jeff Lebby as the OC at Oklahoma. That's some pretty good quarterback development. much better quarterback development than what Bo Nix had at Auburn. So the idea that Dylan Gabriel takes that next step, I think he's going to be great. I think he's absolutely good enough to get Oregon to the college football playoff. I don't think there's going to be some precipitous drop-off. But if I had to choose one or the other, I'm going to choose Bo Nix.
Okay, and then you also mentioned Rutgers, because I'm going to need you to explain this one to me. So Greg Schiano yesterday had this line. There's two great thieves in the world, the past and the future. So by that logic, if the past and the future are great thieves, what's the point of practicing or correcting things? Because to me, it's like, okay, so I think what he's trying to say is it's all about today, but it's like, how about learning from mistakes? How about like having a game plan? Like that was one of those ones where I was like, that's just Schiano. Like that's Schiano being in a room thinking that he said something smart. And you're like that is like something that would get cut from an emo album for a line in 2006.
Well, I also heard Greg Schiano say yesterday that he's got to get some of the younger guys on his defense reps this year.
No way.
They're going to graduate almost everybody off of this defense, and that their 2025 defense is going to maybe be looking a little bleak. So I heard that. So he's looking ahead too. I mean, this is why Greg Schiano would never have worked in the SEC, because you can say dumb stuff when you're the coach at Rutgers and nobody will care. But when you say dumb stuff and you're the head coach at Tennessee or in the SEC, it's just going to get put under a microscope. Much like every dumb thing that Butch Jones ever said got put under a microscope. And now he can say all the dumb stuff in the world that he wants to at Arkansas State, and nobody cares. So it's a perfect example there of why Greg Schiano is exactly where Greg Schiano needs to be.
We're talking with David Cobb here on Jeffrey Wright and Company. Make sure you follow him on Twitter, on X, at David W. Cobb. All right, switching gears. I think we talked about it last week. We pretty much nailed that there wasn't going to be a whole lot from SEC Media Days, and you even specifically pointed out you thought the biggest story would be Nick Saban. It was. I think the perfect explanation of SEC Media Days last week was the Kiffin-Feinbaum exchange, which, by the way, I'm willing to put my life on, is a bit. That was going viral on Thursday, and it happened on Monday. Like, the fact that it was, like, recycled. All right, so this is kind of the question, though, that I'm more curious about. If you had to power rank the SEC teams from most to least confident, you know, let's say like your top 6-7 teams that would actually make the playoff, how are you ranking it?
Well, Georgia and Texas, something's got to go terribly wrong for either of those schools to miss the playoff. So, yeah, it starts with those two. Then, you know what, give me Ole Miss at three. I think what they've done to fortify the defensive line is pretty impressive. So give me the Rebs at three. I go Bama four. And then after that, it gets tough, but I would probably do LSU five. And then you get to six and seven, it's tough. I mean, there's a lot of thought that Missouri could be that team. But I'll go with the homer pick here and put Tennessee at six, because, I mean, I really do think that if Nico is as good as advertised, he could be that sort of a difference maker for them. So that's it for me. It's Georgia, Texas, Ole Miss, Alabama, LSU, Tennessee. I mean, that would be my top six.
Are we sleeping on Alabama?
No, I have legitimate concerns about their secondary. I mean, you lost two first-round draft picks at corner. You lose your elite safety, Caleb Downs, who transfers to Ohio State. So, no, I don't know. I mean, there's some legitimate questions there. And now we're talking about Jalen Milroe getting familiar and developing chemistry with an entirely new group of receivers that, by the way, they might end up starting and relying heavily on a true freshman who reclassified. I mean, that's scary when you look at some of the perimeter skill position players that they're going to be relying on. Actually, on the offensive and defensive lines, I think they're going to be pretty solid. I think they're going to be fine. And I think Jalen Milroe will even be a better quarterback under Kalen DeBoer, but I do have concerns about their secondary and their receivers.
I'm just a little worried about living in a universe where we're giving Ole Miss the benefit of the doubt and we're skeptical in Alabama.
I know, but you gotta.
I mean, I'm the guy that preaches. Listen, anything that happened pre-2020, like, it's just a different day and age, and I do fundamentally acknowledge that. But it's like that's still taking some getting used to.
Well, this is the year where Ole Miss has pushed in all the chips. And they may have so much NIL tied up in this roster that their next couple of rosters aren't nearly as good because there's just not enough resources left from the donors and from the boosters to pay players at the rate that they're going to be paying this year's roster. And so in some respect, it almost feels like an NBA general manager pushing in all the chips and doing what they got to do to assemble the star power this year, knowing that they're going to have some bad salaries on the books, so to speak, in the years to come. It's not a perfect analogy, but it kind of feels to me as though that's what Ole Miss has done. And then when you look at Alabama being in the first year under a new head coach who's never been in the SEC before, I think there's a legitimate case there for Ole Miss to be considered ahead of, you know, Alabama going into the season.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.